Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's August 27th. Currently, we've got 49 degrees in historic Old Town, and Heber City reporting 47 degrees under sunny skies. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. I hope you got a chance to enjoy another nice, cool, comfortable start out there. And as everyone gets ready to make their way on out and about throughout the day, we're going to be seeing this nice weather sticking around. We've got lots of sunshine, and that's expected to stay thanks to our friend high pressure. That's the big blue H on the weather map, and that basically just means sinking air. It doesn't allow any moisture to rise, and so we don't get the clouds. So that's why we stay sunny throughout the day. And the temperatures, yeah, we'll definitely take those for late August. Right now, we're talking probably highs upper 70s to maybe around 80 in Park City this afternoon. And even in the Heber Valley, we're talking temperatures climbing only in the mid 80s with lots of sunshine. It's going to be a beautiful, beautiful Tuesday out there. And if you like Tuesday, you'll definitely like Wednesday because it's more of the same. We're going to be looking at that sunshine, cool morning start with temperatures starting off in the 40s and 50s, and we'll climb into the 70s to low to mid 80s as we get into the afternoon hours with lots of sunshine. Again, just some gorgeous weather for any of your outdoor activities. If you want to go for a hike, maybe try a little mountain bike riding. It's going to be perfect out there as we go throughout the day, but definitely at least try to have lunch outside over the next couple of days. And then as we get into your Thursday, we'll continue with that sunshine and those temperatures starting off in the 40s and highs in the 70s, low 80s out there. But all good things must come to an end at some point. I'm sure most folks know that, and that will be the case with this weather pattern as well. While it's pretty nice throughout the week, as we get towards the weekend, we're going to start to notice some small-scale changes. So we'll start to bring back in a little humidity. We'll bring back the temperatures a little bit up into the low to mid-80s as you get towards Park City and around the Heber Valley. Temperatures will begin to approach the 90-degree mark again. So it will change for us, and with that will be a little bit more humidity as well and a few extra clouds in the sky. I do think we stay primarily dry, but again, I can't rule out that monsoon moisture trying to sneak back in as we get towards especially the second half of our holiday weekend. So Sunday heading into Labor Day on Monday, we could have to introduce a chance of a few isolated storms. But hey, folks, no need to cancel any plans or get too concerned as of yet. The chances look pretty slim, and it's nothing like what we saw this past weekend or the past couple of weeks where we had to deal with all that flooding. We're just talking a chance of an isolated storm or two sneaking back into the forecast. But overall, we're looking at lots of sunshine heading our way between now and then, and these temperatures will stay very pleasant through at least Wednesday and Thursday. And then as we get towards Friday into the weekend, that's when we'll start to notice the warming trends starting to sneak back across the area. One other thing we'd like to point out, of course, as well, is if you suffer from allergies, we've noticed the pollen starting to ramp back up, specifically the ragweed and the sagebrush. So if you suffer from those or affected by that by any means, definitely take your allergy medications before you get out to enjoy this nice weather, Leslie.
Okay, thank you, Cedric.
Thank you.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott, taking a look at the agenda for Wednesday's County Council meeting. Park City Council Member Ryan Dickey will be joined by Main Street business owner Maren Mullen, talking about their participation on the Main Street Area Plan Committee and the future proposals for the Old Town area. And Development Manager for Utah Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, Lisa Finney, is joined by committee members Glenn and Tracy Seymour with details on the upcoming Walk to End Alzheimer's. It's happening here in Park City September 7th. Corey Richens' three-day preliminary hearing may only last two. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the prosecution has rested its case, and we may learn if Richens will stand trial today. Here's the latest.
Richens, the Camas mother of three accused of killing her husband Eric Richens, was in court Monday. It was day one of her preliminary hearing, which will determine if she'll stand trial for murder as well as drug and financial charges. Third District Court scheduled 3 days for the hearing. However, after 1 day of testimony, the prosecution rests its case. Neither the Summit County Attorney's Office nor Richens' defense team say they will call any more witnesses. A detective, digital forensics expert, and forensic accountant took the stand Monday, but two other witnesses prosecutors wanted to testify didn't. In a bench brief filed the Friday before the hearing, prosecutors say they wanted to call Eric Richens' business partner and friend to testify. They claim he called both of them on Valentine's Day 2022, the day Corey Richens allegedly first tried to poison him with fentanyl. Court papers state Richens' defense team intended to object to their testimony because it's hearsay. Prosecutors argue hearsay restrictions are looser during preliminary hearings than at trial. But after a closed-door discussion with Judge Richard Mrozek and the defense team Monday that lasted more than 2 hours, Eric Richens' two friends were left off the witness list. They'd been expected to testify. Eric Richens believed his wife tried to kill him in February of 2022, weeks before he was ultimately found dead with five times the lethal dose of fentanyl in his system. But some of those details were covered in digital forensics consultant Chris Kotrodimos' testimony about phone records. Those records include logs of Corey Richens' movement and phone activity shortly after 3 a.m. March 4th of 2022, around the time of Eric Richens' death at the family home, but before she called 911. Defense attorney Wendy Lewis points out that investigators never found fentanyl in the house or found pills testing positive for it. Chief Prosecutor Brad Bloodworth counters that tests of a bag of THC gummies found at the home, quote, indicate fentanyl, meaning they tested positive for fentanyl precursors or related substances. And the state has sworn statements from a housekeeper Corey Richens employed saying she sold Richens the drug. While cross-examining Summit County Detective Jeff O'Driscoll, Lewis raised the issue of whether the housekeeper is lying for a reduced sentence in an unrelated drug case. After the state's forensic accountant, Brooke Carrington, testified, defense attorney Kathy Nestor also pointed out that Eric Richens' family previously employed her. The family had hired her for help in their civil cases, but she says she hasn't spoken with Eric's family for about a year now. Her testimony related to Corey Richens' alleged financial crimes. Besides attempted and aggravated murder and drug charges, Richens is charged with mortgage fraud, forgery, and insurance fraud. Prosecutors have brought 11 felonies in all, more than enough to put her in jail for life if she's convicted. A year and a half after her arrest, Richens may learn Tuesday if she'll be put on trial. At the end of the first day of testimony, the judge says he'd like to wait one day before ruling to confirm Richens is waiving her right to testify. The second day of her preliminary hearing begins at 10 in the morning at the Silver Summit Courthouse. Richens is being held without bond in the Summit County Jail. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And Connor Thomas will be back in the courtroom today for that preliminary hearing at Summit County's 3rd District Court. You can read the live blog updates online at kpcw.org. Well, the Summit County Council meets at the Summit County Courthouse tomorrow starting at 2:50. In the studio with a meeting preview is Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Before we get to that agenda, day two, as we reported here on the Corey Richens preliminary hearing, a hearing that Summit County is paying for both the prosecution and defense. Any idea how much money has been spent on this at this point?
I don't have a number of what's been spent. We are paying both sides of that trial as Ms. Richens has gone indigent on that case. And it's unfortunate the cost will be borne on the taxpayer for both the prosecution and the defense. But we're looking at that from a budget perspective and trying to prepare for mostly 2025 when this is likely to go to trial.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, did you have to pull money out of contingency, though, to pay for it originally because you may not have budgeted it?
Yes, we did. The legal department does have a contingency fund for these kinds of cases. Obviously, this is so high profile, and it will go above and beyond what our current budget resources are. So we're preparing for this mostly for 2025. For every key witness that the prosecution has, the defense has a counter, and vice versa. So this will be a very expensive process.
All right. So you're waiting to kind of get those numbers from the county attorney's office as you begin to prepare or look at your budget then, huh?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And we just contracted with the legal defense for Ms. Richens maybe 2 months ago. So those costs are just kind of coming in. We're just getting an idea of how much that might be, especially for 2025.
Okay. Up first on the agenda, discussion and update on the Kimball Junction Environmental Impact Statement from Summit County Transportation Planning Director Carl Miller and County Engineer Brandon Brady. I guess the Reader's Digest version of this is that we know we need to do something about the Kimball Junction traffic, and the hope is to, quote, achieve a seamlessly connected neighborhood and create a people-oriented built environment. UDOT has narrowed down the options to three conceptual alternatives that we've reported on over the years, A, B, and C, all of which required an environmental analysis. Now that's been narrowed down to two alternatives, A and C. I mean, it seems like last time we talked about this, the council had hoped to get an alternative B plus, but that's been taken off the table?
It has. I think it proved not to be viable, and it's presented as part of this report tomorrow that Carl and his team have gone through that effort of B plus and are hoping to officially remove it from consideration. And then we want to make sure we're part of this process. We're trying to make sure that we're ready when they're ready for our recommendations and our comments, that we are able to present those in a concise and in collaborative manner with the county council.
Okay, and they were taken off just because what? It was too expensive, or?
I think actually B plus key part of that I remember was it was so close to the Hugo Visitor Center building that it would possibly have us removing that building. That's just not something we can do. So it was too wide, too much right of way.
Okay, so there is a ROD, as they call it, or a record of decision, must be finalized before the project can be included in UDOT's STIP. This is the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program. Is this being fast-tracked given the Dakota Pacific negotiations?
It's not, and that's probably, as we've talked about this over the last 6 to 8 months, we said this very much, several times. We're too early on this process. So we're trying to let that process play out, let that be the record of a decision that we get that we can then take to, especially if it's something that we agree to, and we're looking at lots of the different factors on whatever that decision will be. A pedestrian bridge is going to be called out tomorrow in the meeting, and we want to be ready. We want to be ready for comments, recommendations, and as well as if there's betterments or ways that we can come to the table and help provide a better facility for our public, we want to be ready for that.
What does that mean? A pedestrian bridge will be called out at the meeting tomorrow?
In the staff report, there's discussion about a pedestrian bridge. And what Carl and his team have done is they've looked at other pedestrian bridges in other communities, and they've shown some of those, and they will display those. I think that effort is to, what UDOT's going to do is they're going to say, you need a pedestrian bridge here, and they're going to put an iron cage that goes across our 224 from east to west, and that's probably not going to be suitable for what we want in this area. As we're trying to master plan this area as something that could be a gathering place and a community center. So as we talk about that pedestrian bridge, if that's something that is viable on UDOT side, what does that mean for what they will do, and what can we do to bring a betterment? And of course, that'll be a financial impact to us.
Yeah, and then back to the Dakota Pacific negotiations. We had heard that negotiations would be smoother if there was actually some state guarantee that Kimball Junction would be fixed as part of this development approval. So does this process need to be done before the start of the legislative session in January?
I think our goal now is to come to some consensus, general consensus on general ideas. Right now, I can tell you we are talking about property. What can go on to the transit center? What can go on the Richens Library? What can go on the Skull Candy area? And then, of course, that goes further west will be discussed maybe as part of that, but at a later time. So we're talking about that right now. I do think it would be important that we wind a lot of that up before the legislative session, not because we're afraid of repercussions, but because we want to walk hand in hand with the developer and say, we've got a really nice concept here. What can you do for us on 224? Because it's going to be crucial, and Dakota Pacific knows that. That's part of this process, is we've got to get a fix to that area.
So the two choices that we're left with, Alt-C and Alt-A and Alt-C, are miles and millions apart. We're talking about $41 million for Alternative C, almost $108 million for Alternative A. So what are the planners here looking for from the council? A recommendation to UDOT on which alternative to pursue?
If not a recommendation tomorrow, a consensus on how we would get a recommendation when we need that recommendation. So you went through the kind of the process where we're working on a draft EIS right now, UDOT is. After the draft EIS comes out, there's a final EIS, and then there's the record of decision. So in that process, probably in the very near future, we're going to need to weigh in, and we need to be ready to do so. We can't be caught with them making that record or draft without us having said A or C or a combination of the two or whatever we decide to recommend.
So what are we coming down on? I mean, what is there some kind of consensus at this point from the council on A or C?
I don't know yet. I think A is a little bit more. I've heard more positive things about A. I think if we let this go, UDOT's going to say, if C works and C is less expensive, we'll go with C. So that's, I think, what we're trying to watch out for.
All right. Is the county willing to put up some money on this? I mean, you mentioned maybe a bridge, but anything else?
I think so. And I don't know exactly how much that is and what that looks like. We are also, as part of this process, looking at what DHTRZ might provide for us, if that's something in the future, if the ability for us to get a resort communities tax. Some of those different funding sources would be helpful in this area as well, and a pedestrian bridge would be part of that.
So is it possible that the improvements could be done before Winter Olympics 2034?
Oh, absolutely. I believe so, especially the 224 fix. I think that is the goal that we have, is for it to be done in 224. In fact, I think the last I heard was 2028 would be a finalized time. Now, of course, everything is up to negotiation, and we don't even know which alternative we're talking about, so I'm sure those are going to be vastly different construction schedules.
Construction mitigation will be very important.
And what does something cost in 2028, too? It's just like, I don't want to think about it.
All right, then about 3:30, a council will review a request for proposals for the 30-acre Klein Dolly property. This is located there off of Interstate 80 near Jeremy Ranch. This is being done to what, get a public-private development off the ground?
Yeah, I think I've heard some council members, and I don't want to remember who I'm quoting exactly, but I think if we can get out of this RFP something back from the private sector, something back from the development community that says, here's what this could look like if we take it over, or here's what a partnership might look like, or here's what 100% county ownership looks like, but we come in and help develop it. So we're looking for that kind of feedback, and Jeff Jones and his team have put out a nice timeline of what this RFP process might look like, including refining of that RFP up until, I think, the end of September, putting that RFP out and getting some submissions back in November. And so we've got kind of a advanced timeline. We're hoping to really move this ball forward.
Yeah, so is the only public part of here is the fact that the county owns the property and the developer would do everything else?
Yeah, I think that would be the case. I don't think we're good developers, and I think we're looking to tick some priority boxes that we have, whether that's senior housing, affordable housing, some civic uses, some park uses. There might be some childcare initiatives that can take place here. So we're really looking at this as a real valuable asset to us. And we bought this in, I think, 2017 for a very reasonable price. So we have some flexibility here. We don't want to give this away. We want to have a return to the public, at least of what we've purchased. But I think we have some flexibility with the price that we paid.
And how does that work? I mean, who owns then the affordable units or the senior units? I mean, who would hold any commercial leases?
I think that's to be determined. I think the county has an interest in ownership, for, at least of affordable housing. But I think that's the kind of the proposal we're looking to get back from the development community is, what does this look like? What is your proposal? Do you propose that we own all of it? Do you want to own all of it? And I think we'll look at those proposals and accept the one that makes the most sense for us.
So does the county hold on to the property itself then, and what, lease it to the developer?
I think it's completely up to be determined. I think there are probably, and different council members may feel differently about this, so we'll try to get consensus on that as well.
All right. This didn't go far with neighbors last time this was proposed, especially being so close to the elementary school. I guess what makes you think that things will be different this time around?
Well, I don't necessarily. We have anytime we propose anything in any neighborhood, we have concerns. We'd love to alleviate those concerns. We'd love to have the communities part of the discussion process here. I hear this almost on a daily basis, is that we need housing, we just need it in the right location. And we're trying to evaluate if this is the right location, and I think in a lot of ways it is.
So you mentioned that you hope to have request for proposal issued and then replies back by November, and then what? You go through the planning process?
Then we'd go through probably go through the planning process with the developer that's chosen. But I think we wanted to make it an award in December, mm-hmm. so we would know who that is. I think the actual start date of a project was pushed out to like May, so there'd be a few months in there where we would go through this planning process, developer process. But we're hoping we set a standard in an open meeting that these are the types of activities we want on this property. And so when you come back in to go through a subdivision process, for example, we're aware of what that is. The Planning Commission knows what the council's agenda is, and maybe we can do that in a little faster manner than we usually do.
The Board of Equalization will be meeting. That serves as the Summit County Council. Any idea how many appeals you have seen so far?
I don't know.
But there is a deadline to file an appeal if somebody's not happy with how their property tax notice came out. To file that appeal?
Yes. I don't know what that deadline is, but yes, it's in there.
Okay. It's mid-September, so coming up. Let's see. Also, later on, a discussion and possible action on a discretionary tax abatement for a couple who lives within the Canyon Specially Planned Area, which only allows for up to 20% of the units to be full-time residents there. They were denied last year, so they're appealing again and then this year and then asking to be refunded for last year. So I guess, were they denied because there was already the 20% threshold met?
What I understand from this situation is that they were denied because because the spa said that they couldn't be a full-time resident. I think they appealed that process. The judgment came back that they could be primary residents. So we're saying, okay, we assessed that incorrectly. What that means for previous years, I'm not sure, but I think for their full-time residency is acceptable for, at least that's the recommendation. Of course, the council has all the discretion here, but if you read Stephanie's response to their appeal, I believe she's in favor of that as well.
Okay, so is that kind of like on a first-come, first-served basis? I mean, it's like if you're a full-time resident and, you know, you are the last one.
Well, I'm not sure how that works in the spa. In an HOA, if you want to rent out your property and you have a certain number that can be rented out, you get on a waiting list. But it's interesting to be on a waiting list for full-time residency. But that judgment, I'm not sure how that works if they say that more than 20% can be full-time residents as well. So. Yeah.
Okay, and then real quick, there will be a joint meeting with the City County Council and the Eastside Planning Commission. What are the topics to be discussed here in that hour-long discussion?
Well, the elephant in the room is Cedar Crest, and I think these are good times for the council and the Planning Commission to get together. They don't do that ever. The County Council stays out of the Planning Commission's business on purpose, so this is a nice time that we could even just talk in generalities. I'm sure Cedar Crest is the topic du jour, but we'll sit there and talk about any changes to the council, how they feel about setting some expectations. I think all of our council members would really like to see us not fast track a process, but really try to get things moving in a faster manner. I think that's always some of the feedback we might hear. And just how we might work better together. What are some ways that we as a council can support the East Side as much as we can in their growth challenges and their affordable housing challenges and try and get on that same page.
Okay, anything else, Shane, you wanted to mention?
We do have the RAP Recreation Grant is out. I think the deadline is the end of September, and I think there's around $1.5 million available for those grants that meet the recreation guidelines, and that's September 30th, I believe, is the deadline. So get those in if you can.
Okay, Shane, thanks so much.
Leslie, thank you. Have a great day.
That's Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Recently, the Main Street Area Plan Committee was appointed and began meeting to brainstorm on potential improvements to this district. In the studio, I have two of the committee members, Park City Council Member Ryan Dickey, along with Main Street business owner of Gallery Mar, Maren Mullen. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ryan, let's start with you. Maybe you can give us just the background here. Why was the committee formed to begin with? I mean, is this Olympics related?
You know, I don't think it's exactly Olympics related, although the Olympics seem to be out there as a catalyst for a lot of things. I think this is really born of an effort over multiple years to engage on a visioning process for Main Street and the downtown core to say, where do we want to be in the next, you know, 10 to 50 years? And from the perspective of maintaining our historic character, but also looking at infrastructure improvements and property and economic vibrancy and vitality of the neighborhood. And so we put together this committee of residents and business owners and stakeholders to say, it was put together a locally driven effort with some outside help to put that vision together.
Yeah. So Marn, besides you and Ryan, who else on the committee? And is it a good representation of the stakeholders in the area, both residents and business owners?
I would say it's a small selection of people. And I think sort of next steps for us would be to bring in others and hear for some other voices. I've been doing just some canvassing of the street and speaking with other business owners, and I'd love to get more people involved. But at this point, it's very pie in the sky. We're dreaming, we're discussing big ideas, small ideas, and we're not finalizing anything. And so now's the time, yeah, to bring in some other voices.
All right, so who is chair of this? I mean, is there a committee chair? I mean, or is it you just come and throw out ideas? I mean, what's the structure of this committee?
Well, the meetings are all structured by the city, and they're presenting ideas, and they're bringing in these outside groups. We have Tristan Cleveland from Happy City, and from Zions Public Finance, we have an analytical consultant named Eric Danitz. So they've been presenting ideas and plans, and then the city's been discussing some of their goals with transportation, and we're just very big picture talking about and dreaming about what could be.
Yeah. So what is the process? I mean, how often do you meet?
We are meeting every other month, and then I believe as the fall rolls on, we're going to be meeting more often, and then there's going to be some public meetings as well.
Okay. Do you know that process?
Yeah,
right,
so
at this point?
So we sort of kicked off this effort in May, and we've had, we've had 3 half-day meetings with a group of 9 committee members and staff and consultant team. I think an interim meeting in between there. We have another half-day meeting here in September, and then planning for a couple public open houses in October. And as Marin said, you know, we've been chewing through lots and lots of different concepts and daylighting everything we're doing. So really trying to make this a super transparent effort. We've taken a lot of in-progress work, and we just put it all on our website for residents to react to. And those are concepts that are approved and rejected and discussed and practical and not practical. But we're putting it all out there, and eventually we're going to bring a vision to the public for their reaction too. So we're by no means finished.
All right. Well, so let's talk just a few of those. Where are those concepts coming from? The committee members or from these outside consultants?
I'm coming from both. Yeah. So we did visioning, of course, of what the committee folks who have businesses on Main Street would love to see. And then the consultants are also bringing ideas. So it's a combination. But we've been told from day one, if we get through this whole process and as a committee we decide that we don't want to move forward with any of these things, then we won't.
All right. And like you mentioned, they are kind of big pie in the sky ideas. One of the things that I keep hearing is this desire to have Main Street become pedestrianized and biking. Has that been discussed at this point?
It's been discussed, and by no means do we have any recommendation to do that or not do it. There have been a lot of good conversations just about the geometry of the street. Should we have a curbless street? I think we all have been talking about expanded sidewalks, but what does that mean for parking? Is it a one-way street? All those questions about the street geometry, and that's an issue where I would never expect any kind of consensus from residents and business owners. We don't have any kind of consensus on the committee, but we have an objective, I think, to make it a more walkable, a more inviting, a stickier street where people want to stay longer. And then you get into how do you actually do that when you're thinking about the physical geography of the street itself.
And then, I mean, as somebody who sells large paintings, I mean, I'm not sure that people walk out with large paintings, but is that...
Oh, they do all the time.
Okay. And their car's parked out front. So, I mean, how would that... I mean, is that something you can get behind?
I have spoken with several business owners on the street, and none of them have been pro-pedestrianization. So, yeah, we're not at a consensus on that yet.
Yeah. And the biggest challenge is what? Because we're on an incline. And
well, we're a historic district and we're a historic street. So many of these streets that you see that are all pedestrianized are, they don't have the history that we do. They don't have, you know, all of these old buildings, and they certainly don't have the slope that we have. So some of the models that we're looking at are areas that are flat, or they're cities that have been honestly created to look like Park City, cities that want to be like us, but then, you know, broader pedestrian areas. So,
yeah. Talk to me a little bit about this idea for a gondola that would connect the Brew Pub parking lot to Snow Park. I mean, I know at one time we looked at a gondola from the Flagpole lot. What can you tell us about that idea?
Yeah, this is another one that is a big picture idea. Really, in our last meeting is when we started to look at Brew Pub. You know, there's already a great concept that's out there from us, you know, work before on the Brew Pub lot. But we said, how big can we think? So let's revisit this gondola idea. We've revisited it multiple, you know, we've gone through this process multiple times in the past, run into some feasibility issues, but said, let's take another run at it. What if we did have a gondola that went to Brew Pub or to Sandridge, a connection to Deer Valley, where that's where our number one customer comes from is Deer Valley. And if you have a reimagined street experience and we have another resort connection at the bottom of the street, all of a sudden you're talking about something that's pretty vibrant.
All right, so I guess I kind of saw the direction differently, that it would be taking folks from Main Street to Snow Park, but it's really to bring the folks from Deer Valley to the top of Main Street so that they could then walk down.
I think it goes both ways. You know, on the one hand, Old Town becomes a more attractive place to stay if it's easier to make resort connections, and it also makes it an easier place for folks to come from Deer Valley to here. You know, that Snow Park base is going to look different when that's developed. Wouldn't it be great if, as much as they'd like their customers to be really sticky to that Deer Valley base, if they had a really easy way to get down to Main Street too?
So is there a gondola launch pad there at the base of Snow Park in the plans that you've seen and approved?
You know, I don't know that it's in the plans today, but it actually was talked about when we went through those partnership discussions around what's happening at the base. We have gondola connections all the way to East Village, and we did talk actually about a way to connect into a gondola system that goes to Main Street.
Yeah, and then this concept of housing on the Sandridge parking lots. I mean, as a Main Street employer, you probably know the challenges of getting your employees to and from their workplace. I mean, does that make sense to you?
It does, and it does to several members of the committee as well.
Why? I mean, why is that a good thing, you think? Because I think a lot of the parking lots now are used by Main Street employees.
They are, and when we're looking towards this new plan, we're talking about different ways of bringing in our guests as well as our employees. But I think it's really important to make sure that we maintain parking in Park City, and we have areas where our employees can park, and that we treat our employees like special guests also. A lot of my employees are on the street shopping and dining after they're working or before too. So we need to think of them as a guest also and respect them and what their needs are.
Yeah, but if you take that parking away from them to build housing, is that a
better trade-off?
We're
talking about adding parking and then perhaps some of the development having parking underneath. There's certainly a lot of digging out that we can do also. But again, these are also just they're big plans. So
yeah,
we haven't finalized anything yet, and that's not a for sure.
And I've brought this up before with Matt Dias. I mean, the future of City Hall, is that the future? I mean, as we know, most of the staff drives in from outside city limits. We know that staff uses an incredible number of parking spots in China Bridge. Is that the best use for the Marsac building?
I think that remains to be seen, and I don't think that's a question that this committee is trying to answer. We've got enough complexity as it is. If we want to throw a $40 million new City Hall into the mix, I think we'll just make things even more complicated. So I think what we do know is we have a historic building at the top of that hill that's not going to change. And regardless of its future use, how do we tie that historic building into the street? Some of the concepts sort of do grapple with that.
Okay. And then the plans for, I should say plans, the ideas for a plaza there at the post office. I mean, can you talk a little bit about that, Marn? I mean, just what you envision that would look like, or what you've heard it would look like?
Yeah, city leaders and visionaries for decades have been trying to figure out a way to make a center plaza for Main Street and for the historic area, and that would be a natural place for it.
Yeah. So does that mean the post office goes away?
No. no, we cannot throw that baby out with the bathwater. That is a sacred cow. So I think the post office, as we're talking as a group, it's our opinion that we want to keep the post office in the downtown area.
All right. And then where's there room for a plaza without blocking the traffic flow on Sweet Alley, I guess? Where does the plaza go? We're looking right at it.
Right. Well, moving the post office, changing that, putting the post office in another place in the downtown area.
Yeah. Oh. So I think, yeah, we're not saying that mail, you know, people are going to need to get mail into the future. But if you look at that actual physical footprint of the post office, and again, we're waving away a lot of complexity here, right? I appreciate this. Ideas, not plans. But we've been going on city tour for 20 years and going, gosh, wouldn't it be great if we had a downtown gathering place like all these other towns? And, you know, we do pocket parks. We do the best we can. But we have essentially this sort of light industrial facility in the middle of our downtown with trucks in and out. If you took that post office and moved it to a different location nearby, now you've opened up a giant rectangle in the center of town that goes from Main Street to the Bob Wells lot, and then you're looking straight up the hill to our city hall. You've actually created a really exciting place for that central gathering space. People will need to get mail, but I would say if you were doing a visioning exercise for a downtown that for the next 50 years, you wouldn't necessarily orient it around snail mail, right? Let's think big into the future, and that's a lot of what we've talked about with the post office.
Hmm. All right, and then other development on Sweet Alley, what's been kind of thrown out about ideas about that?
One of the recommendations from the Zions Public Finance was to really figure out how we can fund these things. And in order to fund changing Main Street or adding these parks and perhaps, you know, more public art or an ice rink, we have to come up with the money. And one of the options was selling city lots and city properties to developers in order to build product that then brings more clients and guests to Main Street. So I am really excited about that opportunity of having a small boutique hotel, maybe another hotel that's a little more mid-range. We've been asking for that as a street for a really long time, going back to even the Sweeney Project wanting to have a hotel there. So I'm hoping we can see that.
So what are you talking about? I mean, we've got, of course, the Brewpub parking lot. We've got the Flagpole Park. Mm-hmm. Is that what we're talking about for those mid-size hotels? And is it...
I would say we've... Sweet Alley has, we talk a lot about Main Street, but Sweet Alley has actually been a big focus of the conversation as something that's pretty underutilized, especially from a city property perspective. You know, that a lot of this property is private. The city's property assets are largely along here in this Sweet Alley core, and is a single level surface parking lot, highest and best use for this property. People bring vibrancy, beds bring vibrancy. If you can bring more people into that core, then you drive funding sources for the type of big improvements we're talking about. But you also bring year-round vibrancy. You bring the ability to get a cup of coffee on Main Street in April before 8 in the morning. You bring a lot of the things that locals want to see on Main Street. Those people will bring that vibrancy. So if you do develop on a parking lot, you're putting the parking back underground, and you now have more people in your core, a little bit of commercial. So that's the vision is people and funding sources to make the whole thing more vibrant.
All right. And that was what I wanted to talk a little bit about, the financing then. Does there need to be another mechanism, though, in addition to just selling off public property?
Yeah, I'd envision there are multiple mechanisms that we could leverage into the code. You know, we've had an RDA on Main Street. We have bonding capacity. We'll have leasing. We may sell. We may lease these properties. If you took the whole list of projects, I mean, I'm sure that's not ultimately practical. But when you start to add things up that we'll put consensus around, these are big dollar things. So it's going to take sort of big dollar thinking to make it happen.
All right, and then Amart, I mean, anything that we've talked about, I mean, that especially excites you as a Main Street business owner?
I would say I'm not yet excited about anything I definitely have a lot of hesitancy about some of these plans, particularly the pedestrianization of Main Street. I don't think that's something that the business owners want to see. It might be something that, you know, council and some of the locals want to see. But also, I think it's important to recognize that we've done this time and time again. We had an area plan in 2011. We've had, you know, plans going back to the 80s and 90s. And so we need to look at what we've done already in the past, feasibility studies, and just know that this is not a perfect process, to give our group a little bit of grace and to know that we're also looking for input.
Okay, so it sounds like October is the first time that the public's actually going to be able to see something. I mean, there'll be some kind of presentation, or
I think it's October, but this committee is going, we're fast and light here. So we've just gone through a process around the 5 acres of Bonanza Park, right? That was 2 years of, great community engagement. We had lots and lots of open houses and surveys and focus groups. And this is an effort to say, you know, we've done this before. We did this in 1998. We did it in 2002. We know how to bring a group of stakeholders together and make something happen quickly. The ideas are there. To Marin's point, we've done a lot of the work already. So we're going really quickly. It's going to be messy. We're going to have stuff out in the ether that isn't going to happen. We're not sure about a lot of concepts. And then we're going to come back to the community and put it all out there and see what folks think.
Okay.
Be prepared for some big ideas.
Okay, great. Marin, Ryan, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Well, the annual Wasatch Back Walk to End Alzheimer's is set for September 7th here in Park City. In the studio with details, I have a couple of committee members from the Utah chapter of the association, Glenn and Tracy Seymour. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so who wants to start? Give us just some details about this year's walk.
Sure. So this year's walk, normally we've been doing it in August, trying to be one of the first ones in the country. This year we're going to be September 7th. The starts at 9 o'clock in the morning at the Basin Rec, and the ceremony is at 10, and immediately following will be a two-mile walk along the trail by the Swanna Preserve to the White Barn and back to Basin Rec.
Okay, and how do you get people to participate?
Sure, so you can go, if you want to participate, you can go online to alz.org/walk, and then you can either type in your zip code or your state and look for the Park City Wasatch Back Walk, and you can enroll right there. Either look for a local team to join, or you can just walk individually.
Okay, so is there a fee to walk?
No, absolutely free. And obviously we would love donations. If you want an Alzheimer's t-shirt, you need a $100 donation, and now they've started mailing the shirts to you. So when you donate, a shirt will be mailed to you versus handing them out at the walk.
Okay, and so you can wear it at the walk, yeah.
Yeah.
How many people participate in this?
So we have right now about 220 some people signed up. Interestingly, we actually have more people signed up right now than Salt Lake City does. So we have, Park City is an important part of Utah's both participation and fundraising.
All right, but it is a fundraiser, and
right?
Even though there's no fee, I mean, you're hoping people will do what? Get people to donate in their, for in, them?
Yeah,
in
donate
their
in honor of a relative or a friend. It's a disease that is so widespread. I mean, 1 in 3 adults age 65 and older will potentially get Alzheimer's. Caregiving is very expensive. And, unlike a lot of diseases, there is no cure yet. And so they're continuing to work on a way to find a cure.
Yeah.
And it's just, takes a lot of money.
How much is it that you guys hope to raise out of this?
So we're trying to raise, I believe our goal was $160,000 for Park City. And we are almost 2/3 of the way there. So we're doing generally, Park City it gives a lot. They're very giving and very supportive of both Alzheimer's as well as other causes. And it's important for Utah to hit our goal as a state is the participation of Park City.
All right. How much is the average amount that a walker raises? Any idea?
No, I'm not sure. It's, you know, probably in the $100 range is the average. But, you know, anything is, you know, anything helps.
All right. Then what is the money used for? Does it stay here in Utah or does it?
Part of it stays here in Utah, but a lot of it goes to the national organization. Mm-hmm. So the Alzheimer's organization is the number one supporter, a nonprofit supporter of research in the world for Alzheimer's. They also have a 24/7 helpline that can provide free assistance to anyone 365 days a year to start answering questions about how you can take care of relatives or what if you think you might have Alzheimer's. You know, the caregiving is a big part of it, as well as, you know, preparing yourself if you have that diagnosis.
Yeah. So, Tracy, I mean, why do you get involved? I mean, you guys have taken on a big role here.
Glenn's mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2015, and we moved her to where we were living to make sure that she was being taken care of. And so when we moved here in 2019, she came with us. She lives down in a memory care facility in Salt Lake City. And it's just tough watching her go from being a vibrant, intelligent woman to someone who says the same thing over and over again and doesn't realize that she's doing that.
So she's still talking, though.
Yes, right? Yeah. I mean, it's been a little over 8 years, and, you know, she has everyone's a little different as far as how quickly they deteriorate, you know, their capacity. We've been blessed that we can converse with her, and, you know, she remembers, you know, family, but, you know, things like birthdays and grandchildren's names are now starting to slip, and, you know, it's hard seeing, you know, those things go away from someone who was, you know, she had a great career and she was an intelligent person, and, you know, to see that this slip is disheartening.
Yeah. So again, with all of the funding that goes towards the research, I mean, what do we know about the disease that maybe we didn't know a year ago?
Well, I mean, there's been some progress in the last year as far as some new medications that can help slow down the progression. They also are working on better ways to detect it. So, I mean, it used to be that the only way you could find out someone had Alzheimer's was, you know, after they died. Now they, you know, with neurological exams, they can help diagnose that. They're working on blood tests that would allow you to take a non-invasive blood test and detect Alzheimer's. And so that's very promising. So the important thing is if people know they have it, but they don't necessarily see a lot of symptoms, then there's a lot of things they can do to prepare themselves for that, making, you know, plans for caregiving, for financial plans, people to take care of them, that is a lot easier done when you're more capable than after the fact.
Oh, yeah, because then there's nothing you can really do,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Anything else you wanted to tell us about it? And again, maybe people can register?
Well,
yeah,
you can show up on the day of the walk and register.
Yeah.
If you don't go online, if you decide, hey, I want to walk, your registration.
Yeah,
there.
We'll have a registration table with QR codes where you can do it right there on your phone. So you don't necessarily need to register ahead of time. You know, the other one to point out is we do have a speaker this year, a gentleman named Dan Jaworski, who was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's at age 54. He has his daughter, I believe, lives in town. He's visiting. He's going to join us and speak. And after being diagnosed, did a bucket list item and did the Ironman. So kind of a motivation of, you know, you knowing that you have Alzheimer's doesn't mean the end of what you can do with your life.
For a bit.
For a bit,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's degenerative.
Yeah, I mean, but yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay. Tracy, anything else you want to add?
No, I just hope you'll come out and support us. It's a great cause, and we hope to see you on Saturday, September 7th.
Okay, Tracy and Glenn, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hey, a reminder that Park City Transit is encouraging locals and visitors to use public transportation during Tri-Transit Week. It started on Monday, and those interested are asked to log their transit, carpool, and bike trips for a chance to win prizes. You can find out more by going online to kpcw.org. Today, from 2 to 4 p.m., you can enjoy Park City Transit at the Mark for an afternoon of free yoga, pickleball, and giveaways. Space is limited, so you do need to register ahead of time. Tomorrow, participants can talk transit with the mayor and council at the Fresh Market bus stop. That's happening from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. with refreshments, popsicles, and music. And Thursday is Rider Appreciation Day with free breakfast, coffee, and swag at the Old Town Transit Center. That's happening from 7 to 9. And Friday will feature music on the bus. Riders will have a chance to see a local musician playing live on a Park City Transit bus all morning long.